That's the Jill portion, the Jill Sobule portion of the Jill and Julia show. It is my great honor to welcome now to Excursions Live via the phone line, the Julia part of the Jill and Julia show. Julia Sweeney, welcome.
Well, thanks for having me.
You know, we in public radio have known that song for so many years. And of course, Katy Perry much, much later.
Right, yes.
Sent it up into the stratosphere. But you, I think, were a fan of Jill's and she yours when you came together. And we're just so pleased you guys will be in town this Saturday night at 6 o'clock at the Dayton Art Institute, putting wit and wonder into all of our hearts. And thanks just all the way around, Julia.
Oh, well, I'm so excited to come. I really, I was there a couple of years ago to do this same event.
Yes.
And I fell in love with that town. I wanted to move there.
Please do.
I wish I could.
You make your home in Chicago now? Or
yeah,
yes.
It's actually just north of Chicago, a little town called Wilmette.
You and your daughter, who many of us feel that we've come to know from...
yes, I know. She's not so happy about that, but...
Is that right? Mom!
Mom!
Stop talking about me on the internet!
I'm trying to stop. I really am trying to stop, but if she would stop doing hilarious things that unfold for me almost like a three-act play, I would stop.
She's Mulan. How old is she now?
She's 14.
Wow.
I know. And, you know, she loves Jill, and Jill is like really my best girlfriend, and she's around all the time. And she came, Mulan came with Jill and I last summer. We did a 10-city tour in the summer, and Mulan came with us and was our merch girl.
Oh, so that's a rite of passage. See, that's
good.
I know it.
So she, oh my God, it was so funny. Anyway, yeah.
Well, you're bringing to town, you and Julia, and each of you with her body of song work and your body of character work, a pantheon of just aspects of the human condition, which I think is so beautiful in your case because so much of what your characters are, what your narrative is drawing humor from tragedy. And I did a little reading, and it was back in late 90s when you began to talk about your brother getting cancer, and a part of the way you dealt with it was to go do sort of an informal stand up every Sunday night.
And I know it. Now my big question is how to continue, you know, quality work without needing horrible tragedy to happen to me. That spurs me.
My life is great. My career is dead.
Like, you know, yes, it's like, that is so true. Like, these big events would happen to me, and it was not even a stop and debate whether I should write a monologue about them. It was, I have to put this into a structure. There's so many funny things that happened. That has to be in there. And then I just got busy with it, you know? And, yeah, now, well, that's not really true. I do feel spurred on by things, and I actually feel good about what I'm writing. But it is true. What really started it off was these catastrophes that the world needed to know about, in my opinion.
Well, because we all are, you know, just one twist of fate away from that possibility. That's kind of the beautiful thing about it, is that you approach it with a great deal of humanity.
Well, thank you. I hope so. I'm a human, by the way.
As it turns out.
That's where it comes from.
It comes out from my directly being related to the humans. We're speaking with Julia Sweeney. She'll be with Jill Sobule at the Dayton Art Institute this Saturday night at 6 p.m. It's
I'm so glad to know that it's at 6. And I was like, oh, it's at 6. Oh, we've got to get there right away on Saturday morning.
Yeah, 6 p.m., right?
Okay,
yeah.
6 p.m.
And there'll be, you know, it's also a silent auction, a fundraiser for the Antioch School here in Yellow Springs, and an open wine bar, which is kind of astonishing, really.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
You're going to have some happy, happy audience members.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, well, I guess it pays for itself when there's the auction part of it and the wine.
Exactly. Yeah. That's an interesting.
I know I bid a lot more at things when I've had a little wine.
It's the Jill and Julia show this Saturday here in our beautiful Gem City. And when we were just getting ready to go on, you shared a little tidbit that might be just the biggest reason to grab some tickets to this show and come out and see, because you're going into a semi.
I'm going into hibernation.
You're taking time off. This will be your last performance for a while.
At least 3 years, and maybe longer. I don't know. We'll see. Of course, how do I know it's going to happen in 3 years? But what I realized is, Jill and I have done a lot of shows. Like last year, I think we did 20 dates, and it's so much fun. And then I do a lot of other, emceeing and, speaking, and then sometimes I perform in things, or I'll do a little part, like I do voiceover, and, I'm always doing stuff. And it really, I just don't have time to really have a sustained writing where it really adds up to another book. I put out a book last year, but now I'm trying to write fiction.
Ooh.
And I just thought, my daughter's in eighth grade, so she's about to go into high school. So I really only have 4.5 years left of that, hands-on mothering part, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I know
right.
It never ends, but, where I basically have to be available.
I know, isn't that,
I'm just going to shut down my life. And I have a book that I'm writing that it's all about a marriage that's falling apart, not inspired by my own life.
Okay, good.
Where I have a fairly stable marriage, as much as anyone knows whether that's true or not. And it's about somebody whose kids are graduating from high school and their marriage is falling apart, and it's just this week. And Simon Schuster's going to do the book, and it's fiction. And then I'm going to try, this is just me saying it, so I don't know if it'll happen, to direct a very micro, low-budget movie in my house with some friends based on this book I'm writing. And it's like a 3-year project, so I'm really shutting everything down. And this thing in Yellow Springs on Saturday is my last thing.
This is kind of astonishing because I was looking forward to this show anyway. But now it's like, get it while it's hot.
And also because sometimes with Jill and I, if we do if we're doing a series of shows, we'll bring Dave Carpenter, this amazing bass player, with us.
I've seen some of that online.
It's expensive to bring him.
Oh.
So we usually have to have several shows together in order to justify bringing Dave along. But we both decided that since this is our last show, and we're all such good friends, that we brought Dave in, and we're going to do the show, and then we're going to all drive back to my house on Sunday morning, which is about 5 hours from Yellow Springs, and watch the Academy Awards together. So that's our big weekend.
Well.
So anyway, the point is Dave Carpenter, who is a really amazing bass player, and he plays a big stand-up bass that is just
beautiful.
Incredible, and it adds so much to the show. So he's going to be there, too.
Aww.
So it's going to be really bittersweet and fun for us.
Well, sure, and bittersweet and fun for all of us as well, truly. So you can get your tickets at 767-7642. That's directly to the Antioch School. They're all proceeds benefit. That's this school in Yellow Springs. You can also check it out at antiochschool.org for more information. We're speaking with Julia Sweeney. She and Jill Sobule are bringing their Jill and Julia show and Dave.
And Dave Carpenter
to the Dayton Art Institute in beautiful downtown Dayton. That is Saturday, and the whole soiree gets underway at 6 o'clock. I'm so pleased to hear that you're going to be hunkering down and writing and looking, and I'm myself looking forward to 3 years down the road to what comes. But I have to wonder, do you worry about the line between your life writ large and your privacy, or is it just the most natural thing?
Well, you mean in the past or in the future from now? Because now we're dealing with fiction, which I'm hoping will be much less fraught with the difficulties that come with exposing your personal life to the world, to your friends and family who you talk about. And that is, I have to say, a difficult thing, but personally, I like real stories that really happen. Like, I love The Moth. I love memoirs that are well-written. I love, not self-indulgent, but really well-crafted, personal, true, absolutely true stuff. I just find that the most riveting stuff. And I, of course, have produced some things in that genre. But now I just can't take the toll anymore on my personal life. Which isn't, it's not like anything terrible has happened, but it is, it's really can screw you up in the head, because No, I mean, I'm making this sound like it's such a terrible thing. It isn't a terrible thing. When you take it, like, you have a catastrophe like I've had in my life, like with my brother dying and me having cancer, my very first show, it absolutely is a way to deal with it that is to make art with it. You're making a story. You're sharing it with others. I got to get up every night and tell people my story, and they all got to feel something like I felt if I was doing my job right. And that was enormously healing. On the other hand, you are also are kind of freezing the story, you know, like, and then it's hard to know, even though everything I said was true in the story, sometimes I screw around with the order things happen because I have to put my dramatist hat on at some point. You know what I mean?
You got to tell a good tale.
You know, you emphasize this and you don't emphasize something else, or you leave something out, you know, and then you memorize it, and then it's just in your head, this story that you've come up with. And I mean, I guess I'm not even sure what I'm saying. I'm just saying that I don't always love the result of it, because
right.
it's almost like turning your experiences into a product. And I don't mean that I'm against commercialism, because, well, I am against commercialism, but I mean, but not for that reason. I'm not using a product in that way. I'm just saying it becomes a fixed thing, when in the reality, you know, memory
maybe
is
more fluid
and changing,
yeah.
and facts can be shifted. And anyway, it's just, I don't know. I just don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
I don't want to do it anymore. Now, cut to 5 years from now when I'm doing, you know, my terrible ski accident in New York off Broadway. No, but I am tired of the ramifications of it, and keeping straight what is public and what's private is really hard for me to understand.
Sure.
And now I want to try out for the first time in 20 years having a private life that is distinct from a public life.
But we'll
just want to see what that's like.
Just to check it out.
Yeah.
I was in my reading somewhat struck by the fact that you didn't initially set out to do what you do now. In fact, you attended university and got a degree in economics. You were an accountant at, of all places,
Columbia
Pictures.
Which is now defunct.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And I just...
Well, I was too... First of all, I didn't... You know, I'm 54 now, and sometimes I think I spend way too much time thinking, what if... And that is such a big waste of time. And it's not like I'm not happy with my life. My
right.
life is great. But, you know, you get to my age and you realize how accidental things are. I mean, like, it's not, there's very few people who are like, I'm going to be a neuroscientist. And then and they become one. You know, like, there's so many different ways my life could have gone. And
yeah,
it is true that performing on stage and being funny is really plays well with my skill, my natural abilities. You know, like I definitely had to learn skills, but I naturally tend to be good at that kind of thing. And that's true. But those skills can be used in many different professions. And I just didn't think of myself as doing that on stage. So it was sort of like a gradual thing. Like I loved movies. That was my first love, was movies. I love movies. So I studied film in college, but like as an English degree, kind of, like not technical or anything like that. And then I wanted to be near the film industry, so I thought, well, they've always going to need an accountant. Come on. So I got
That's my foot in the door.
And I worked as an accountant for 5 years at Columbia Pictures. And it was really interesting. And I thought everyone in Hollywood, all they would do would talk about classic films all the time. And I got to Hollywood, and it's like an industry town like any other industry town.
Like, which,
like,
reminds me.
Talk about films like it's the local business. It isn't.
Right. What industry,
going,
right?
Go to the art museum, to the, you know, Preston Sturges revival, the new print of, you know, and people are like, what? You know, like they weren't. But I did find my people. I found my film people. And then I just realized accounting wasn't enough. I wanted to do something else. And so then I just thought, well, I'll just take a class. And then I took a class at the Groundlings, which is sort of like Second City. It's an improv place.
Yeah, back in 1988.
And then I absolutely changed my – I lost my mind when I went there. It was like, oh, my God. It was like opening a door where everything is perfect for you. Like, that was exactly – I didn't know anything about that world. I probably would have gotten into it much earlier if I'd known about it.
Yeah, it's clear that it did just allow you to bloom. You started in 88 by 80, I think later that year?
Yeah, it was like about, well, I took classes, I think. I started in 86 taking classes. I was working as an accountant, but at night I would take classes.
And then you became a part of the Sunday Company, which is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, that was a big deal. Then I got into the main stage, and then they recruit for Saturday Night Live there. And there was friends, you know, like John Lovitz, Phil Hartman, Lorraine Newman, who was older than me, but she had, you know, I knew her through the Groundlings. There was connections with Groundlings people, and they always came and looked at everybody there. And
and you were picked. Lauren Michaels
picked,
reached
it was,
out.
It was me, Kathy Griffin, and Lisa Kudrow.
Wow.
And I got picked.
Pretty, wow.
And I remember thinking later, God, I know I'm good, but those girls are so good. And I, you know what? I just hope they have careers after I get on Saturday Night Live. I really hope they
very sweet
do
of
something, you.
You
know, just to make it a little bit.
That they can do something to augment their waitress jobs and
yeah.
do something that's satisfying artistically.
Lisa Kudrow was working for her dad. Her dad had a headache clinic.
Really?
Her dad was a doctor who had a headache clinic, and she was a receptionist. And Kathy Griffin is just so funny, and that's just a whole other story. But anyway, so
what a great graduating class.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're speaking with Julia Sweeney. She and Jill Sobule are at the Dayton Art Institute. This Saturday, the whole spectacular soiree gets underway at 6 o'clock. There's a silent auction. There's wine available. There is food from Current Cuisine. And there's going to be great laughter and humanity together with the Jill and Julia show. You can find out more about this at antiochschool.org, or you can arrange to make yourself present. Get your tickets at 767-7642. I love the story of how you two met. You, it's my understanding that it had to do around a TED Talk?
Yes. Well, not a talk. We were just both at TED.
Yeah.
This is in the old days. Now, this is, because it's funny, I met Jill and my husband in the same two-month period.
Wow. Lasting.
And it was so funny because that's 8 years ago now, and they became the two most important people in my life and are still, I mean, outside of my daughter. Like, it was so, it's so funny how life, even at my advanced age, life can throw you a curveball.
And still delight.
Yeah, I was a big fan of Jill's. I'd gone to her concerts. I was a fan of hers. I'd written a pilot even with my friend Wendy, and we thought Jill was the perfect person to do the theme song. Like, I already felt like her songs were, and her sound, and how she can be funny and sad, and but then make a point and be smart about it, but then also be flaky, was just exactly how I saw how what I was. You know, it was just really a similar sensibility. And so I just loved her. So I thought she's the perfect person to do the theme song. And like our representatives had contacted each other, and but then the whole thing fell apart. So we never met or anything. Anyway, then I was at TED, and there she was.
Like that's Jill Sobule.
And so we start talking, and it turns out we live two blocks away from each other.
No.
Yes.
Oh,
we
how weird.
So we started. You know, we hung out at the TED conference, of course, and she's a big TED person. She always does the music, and is always a big presence at the TED conferences. And so after that, we started, you know, walking to each other's house. And like Mulan, now I'm thinking, so Mulan's 14, Mulan was 6, and we walked between each other's places in L.A. all the time. I mean, it's really two blocks away.
Or, you're like the only people that would walk in L.A. I mean,
I know, and you know, actually, I kept my house in L.A. even after moving here, and my mother-in-law lives it now. And so when we go back there, which is a few times a year, you know, we're still walking back and forth between Jill's place. And I actually walk a lot in L.A. I'm a walker in L.A.
Wow. That's not the
stereotype. But anyway, so Jill and I started hanging out, and then she asked me to come to a concert of hers at this place because I am getting old. I can't remember the name, even though it's the main part of my life. On Fairfax. Okay, terrible.
That we'll is come a, back
that,
to
wait till I tell Jill that. But you know what? I won't remember to tell Jill that about the thing I didn't remember. But Jill, I didn't remember this thing, and I didn't remember to tell you. But, and I,
but it was awesome.
I didn't remember the name. Largo. Largo. Okay. She was performing at Largo, and a lot of comedians perform at Largo.
All right.
So I'd performed there many times. And she was doing a concert, and she said, will you just come up and kind of, you know, like, do my patter for me. Between songs while I'm tuning my guitar and
that's
stuff.
That's brilliant.
And so I did, and then it just sort of evolved into this Jill and Julia show. And so now, I would say our first show was probably 8 years ago this summer.
Wow.
So 8 years, I mean, but we didn't do it very seriously until about 6 years ago, I'd say.
Wow.
But anyway, yeah. And then I was in this crazy thing meeting this guy who lives here where I am now.
In Chi-Town.
Was kidnapped and taken here to Wilmette. And he was here, and but we had never met. We were just in the phone call part of our dating experience.
Yeah.
And Jill was doing a show in Chicago, so I told him to go so she could check him out.
Now that's a true friend.
If he was good or not.
And obviously she made a good report.
Like, oh, he's good. So, and then all was within 2 months. Like, I met Jill. We were on the phone hanging out. She did a concert here. Michael came at all. Everybody's lives was changed.
Well, so from 8 years ago to this Saturday at the Dayton Art Institute, the last show, at least for a while, we can
at least
hope down the road.
I'm sure we'll do it again when Mulan's in college. That's what I would say to Jill.
We'll ship her out and we'll hit the road.
Exactly. But right now it's too hard to coordinate with all the rides to ballet classes that she needs.
Oh, no kidding. Okay, one last thing, or maybe this one last of two things. In the reading I did, there was a point in your life that you were informed by your mother that your birthday wasn't what you thought it was.
Yes,
and
that's
right. What? Why? What?
Well, because she's a nut, for one thing, and because she has to make everything work for her. But actually, it was a good thing, I guess. The cutoff date, you had to be 6 by September 15th.
Oh, it's
then,
a school thing.
And my birthday was October 10th. And what my mom says is that I was so smart that she thought if I waited another year, I would be so advanced. But my feeling is, right, you had 5 other kids at home. You were just trying to get rid of somebody.
Or.
So she faked a birth certificate.
So that you would go to school later.
And changed my birthday to September 10th so that it was just before the cutoff date. And then she got in, you know, panicked thinking, you know, because then I had to think my birthday was September 10th. So she kind of gaslighted me.
Wow.
Because, like, she'd go, well, remember how your birthday's September 10th? Like, she did a systematic brainwashing thing.
Honey, now remember.
Honey, it's 3 months away from your birthday. Me, I'm 5. When is that again? September 10th. And I'm thinking, wow. I remember it was 10 something.
That shows.
Okay, so then I think my birthday's September 10th.
Wow.
And then when I was 12, I was about to have a big slumber party. Also, I had a huge Virgo poster in my bedroom.
Which would have been your sign
every day.
If you had been on September 10th.
Yes.
But?
And then my interpretation of events is that it was also convenient to her. I was like, I'm going to have my slumber party. And she's like, no, why don't you have it in October? And I was like, why? And she goes, well, because actually your birthday's in October.
So you were quite young when this information was given to you.
Yeah.
Wow.
So anyway, so I had 6 birthdays on the wrong day.
So
but then she said, but don't worry, darling. Every day when it was your birthday, but you didn't know it, I made sure that you ate a piece of cake that day.
Okay, I think I really like your mom.
I know, like, I can't stop turning up and back the idea of that. Like, what does that mean? Like, that if you don't have cake on your birthday, you're missing out on something. So even though I don't know it's my birthday, but you made sure that I had cake on that day. So you somehow weren't cheating me out of my cake allotment.
What's the big difference between Virgos and Libras, which are, no, you're not a Virgo, you're
a
Libra.
I don't even care.
You don't even care?
That's all.
Yeah, yeah, but you did
and
before.
So I was on to the whole astrology thing being meaningless.
Right.
Much earlier than everyone else. Because then.
Right.
I had, so then I wasn't a Virgo. So then I thought, well, now I have to get the Libra poster. I looked up all the Libra stuff and it's, you know, like that's when it first dawned on me that this was just everyone could apply every quality to themselves.
Yeah. Big general
it's just
swaths
a big general,
of color.
You're this. Sometimes you're happy, but yet other times sad.
Well, that all might feed into you discovering early the just really unspecific nature of horoscopes, and then many, many years later finding the sort of unnecessity of God himself. But that might be a conversation for another time. But
that's a long one.
That is, isn't it? But that's a part of your offering. By the way, three just amazing sort of offerings that you have are the God Said Ha, which I highly recommend, In the Family Way, which is about your dear daughter, and Letting Go of God. The first time I came in contact with that, by the way, was when you were speaking with Terry Gross on Fresh Air. And we all talk about those driveway moments. I couldn't get out of the car.
Oh, really? Because now I think of that interview and I get embarrassed by it when I think of it.
Why?
Because I felt like it was too, there was too much. She wanted to talk a lot about, and it wasn't like, she was fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just, I was embarrassed about myself being so dippy, I guess, because I had this kind of quasi, what I thought was a religious experience after this terrible breakup. And then I started analyzing the experience because I had this, you know, it was like a lifetime kill yourself, a terrible breakup, you know, like it was just the worst. And like I had months of feeling really sad, like not knowing if I was going to pull out of it, feeling so sad, and I'm crying a lot and all this stuff. Anyway, and then I had this kind of religious experience, or what I thought it was a religious experience, and then I became, and I was, did feel better afterwards. I felt, you know, on the road to recovery, and I was on the road to recovery. But then I started thinking about that experience, and that was one of the things that propelled me to learn more about religion. And it was kind of ironic because it starts with a positive religious experience, but it ends up with me rejecting the whole idea of God, at least. Okay. So, but on Terry Gross's show, I felt like I spent so much time talking about crying over this boyfriend. It was too much time.
Well,
about that. And
see,
then I just thought, oh God.
All of us have spent some time crying.
I know. So, but I felt like relative to the whole interview, it was like 98% of the interview with me. And then I continued to cry.
And then there was more crying. And then I cried some more. So many
and
tissues.
Then, oh, by the way, and we're back with Julie Sweeney. I continued my crying.
No, but that's what hooked me. That's what hooked me. It was a great, great interview. I really, really enjoyed it, and that's what made me stay through the epiphany and through the whole thing. So I think you should go ahead and let yourself stop worrying about that one bit.
All right, okay, I'll let that one go. My list of regrets. Oh!
No! Cross that one off. Julia Sweeney, what a delight. I'm so looking forward to Saturday. You and Jill Sobule, the Jill and Julia Show at the Dayton Art Institute. The show gets underway at 6 o'clock. There's a silent auction. There'll be a live auction later. But the real awesome meat of the matter is Julia Sweeney and Jill Sobule. You can find out more at antiochschool.org or call 767-7642. And this could be the last time. Maybe ever, but almost surely for quite a while.
For a while, anyway, yeah.
Julia, thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks for your stories. Thanks for sharing a part of your life. And I always find a way to resonate that back to myself, and I think that's what the appeal is. You've got the beautiful take on humanity, and I always, always have been grateful for the laughter.
Oh, you're so sweet. You've made my day.
Yay!
Yay!
Well, you're going to make my night Saturday, too. So thanks so much. We were going to throw, Julia, we talked about this tune, Joey, from Jill Sobule's.
I have Jill has this great song all about Joey Heatherton, and I told her that when
wait
I was
a minute.
On SNL,
who's that?
This is before computers because I'm so old. I was calling a toll-free number to a monk's residence, like a monastery in Oregon, to order fruitcakes from this for my family.
Of course
Christmas.
You were, yeah.
And I got a monk on the phone who hadn't talked to anyone in the outside world for 20 years. I was his first phone call.
Wow.
And I was calling from Rockefeller Center, and I was like, well, I'm on this show Saturday Night Live, and like he didn't really know what that was, and it didn't matter anyway. But I was ordering all these fruitcakes. And then at the end, I was like, oh, my God, you've talked to nobody but another monk for 20 years, you know.
Said, and the magnitude.
And I said, do you have any questions? And he said, I only have one question I've wondered about for 20 years. Whatever happened to Joey Heatherton?
Oh.
That was his question.
How sweet.
So anyway,
Joey Heatherton
on stage. See, now I might tell that this weekend. But in a better way. And then Jill plays this fantastic song that you're going to go out on.
Julia Sweeney, thank you so much.
All right, thanks so much.
We'll see you Saturday.